He moved quickly aside to let in the next guest, bowed again, and then moved off towards the buffets, where the other guests were assembling. There I saw him turn, staring back at me, and presently he rubbed his brow with his fingers, gave his head a quick shake as a man will who is putting some trifle out of his mind, and gave his attention to a waiter who was proffering champagne. I knew I was crimson with a shock, and one knee was trembling violently, but I forced myself to smile steadily as the guest before me bobbed in a deep curtsy, and her escort swept me a bow. I saw the concern in their faces. When I turn red, I'm a daunting sight. So I forced a laugh. "Forgive me," I told them. "I'm out of breath with saying thank you to several hundred people." They were delighted at being so familiarly addressed by royalty, and then the crisis was past, and I had time to steady myself. But it had been a horrible moment, and I must have gone through the rest of that reception like a man in a dream, for I can remember nothing more until I was back in my own room, alone with Deschard, Rudy, and Côté, drinking brandy from a glass that rattled against my teeth. "It was a bad moment," was Rudy's verdict. "For a second I thought we were gone. I had him covered from my pocket, and I swear if he had taken an instant longer to smile, I'd have shot him down and claimed he was preparing to assassinate you. And God knows what might have come of that. Phew! But he saw I wasn't the prince." I beat on the arm of my chair. "He saw through me, didn't he? You saw him to Côté, didn't he?" "I doubt it," says he. "For a moment he thought there was something strange about you, and then he told himself it was his own imagination. You saw him shake his head. He had tried to puzzle it out, but couldn't, and now he no more doubts you than he doubts himself." "By God, I hope so." I attacked the brandy again. "Suppose he thinks better of it, though, becomes suspicious." "He's being watched every moment he is in Strachan's," says Rudy. "We have other reasons for keeping a sharp eye on Master Hansen."
"What's that?"
"Ah, his journey here wasn't only to dance at your wedding. We know that for months now he and other members of the Danish government have been in correspondence with the more militant Danish faction in Strachan's. People like the Eider Danes over the border, only rather more dangerous. And they watch everything German like hawks, hold secret meetings, that sort of thing. There's talk of a clandestine organization, the Sons of the Volksungs, dedicated to fly to arms in the event of any threat from Berlin to Strachensian independence." Rudy grinned pleasantly. "We'll settle with those gentlemen when the time comes. For the present, neither they nor friend Hansen need trouble you. The game's all but won, my boy." And he slapped me on the shoulder. "With the wedding behind us, there's nothing to do but sit out the weeks until Otto gives the word that our good Carl Gustav is ready to resume the role in which you are proving such a distinguished understudy. Then back to merry England for you. And let's hope the delectable Irma isn't too disappointed in the change, shall we?" This was all very well, but I was by no means sure that the worst was past. I'd had some nasty turns in my brief life as Prince Carl Gustav, and it seemed odds on there being a few more before they'd sweated the clap out of him and he could succeed me on the consort's throne. And even then, would Bismarck keep faith? I didn't want to think about that just yet, but it was always at the back of my mind. Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof, but you have to watch your step at night, too.